Hello and welcome to the Mortgage and Real Estate Podcast by Pinnacle. I'm Chris Giannino, and I am joined today by some very special guests that I'm looking forward to today. Patrick Halloran, to start. Patrick is the owner of McGurk's Irish Pub. This bar has over 20,000 square feet in the heart of Soulard. Pat has created an absolutely incredible atmosphere here, and it's an authentic Irish pub with a patio that provides unparalleled ambiance. McGurk's was established in 1978 and known as one of the best bars in America, I kid you not. It has accolades all over in publications around the United States. Patrick is one of those guys that would do anything to help out a friend. He's also a sports enthusiast, specifically soccer teams his daughter Ella played for, which leads me to my next guest, the head coach, Michael Preusser. Soccer runs deep in the Preusser family with all four children playing high-level soccer. Two of them just finishing up a season as sisters at St. Louis University, which is unbelievable as a parent, I'm sure. Finally, my co-host, Pete Giannino, soccer dad of Emma and Lexi Giannino, both also playing high-level soccer. Emma currently at Dayton. This trio of Pat, Mike, and Pete have spent endless hours recruiting, training, retaining, and certainly having many late night meetings at McGurk's, all for the kids. Very nice of you guys. So today we're going to do something a little bit different, and we want to explore that dynamic and have some fun talking about some correlations between sports and business and success. So Mike, Pat, Pete, welcome to the show. We're sitting here in the historic middle of Soulard. The place is closed, but we're in the middle of McGurk's. This place is unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be joined by my two best pals, Mike and Pat, and especially in this atmosphere. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, pleasure to be here with some great pals.
Great. Well, we are, like Chris said, we're going to explore a variety of topics today, but at the heart of it, we're going to get this opportunity to do what we've talked about doing for quite some time, and that is memorializing one of the most incredible decades of our lives. And it started with our kids kind of getting involved in youth soccer, but specifically we're going to talk about an aspect of that decade, the most recent several years in which they played together in high school, but more particularly when Michael Preusser became the coach of the St. Louis Rangers. So, Michael, what a pleasure it has been to get to know you as a friend and as the coach of our children. And I'm speaking for myself and for Patrick, I know, for my daughter Emma, his daughter Ella. And tell us, by way of introduction, your soccer background, and we were going to get into how you essentially became the captain of the ship for the Rangers.
So my background, I guess, starts when I'm a kid. My dad was, you know, a soccer guy and played a lot of soccer in and around St. Louis. He got a little bit of a late start because soccer wasn't as available when he was a younger man as it is nowadays for anyone and everyone. But he actually was my youth coach at the CYC level, kind of back when CYC mattered a little bit more than it does now.
Don't tell Patrick that.
And we were down in South County at Assumption Parish, which you know, was a bit of a you know, soccer powerhouse back in the day.
Here we go. You know, already.
Anyway, fast forward to club soccer. played my club soccer for Kutus, obviously a well-known soccer club in St. Louis. They had a few youth teams, and that just kind of inspired me to, I guess my dad really inspired me to get into coaching. And I started coaching club soccer myself about 18 years ago with my oldest daughter, Erica, who's now 27. She was in third grade, and I started a team for her down in South County at the Colping Kicks Soccer Club. And shortly after that, I started another team with my son, Klaus, who is 24. And I had those two teams going, and then...
those were both at Colping?
They were both at Colping.
Now, that's correct. A Christopher Giannino.
I spent a lot of time on those fields off of 55 there. That gets flooded now. I don't know if you guys are at those fields.
Oh, we were, and they flooded pretty often. But those guys down there did a great job actually making those fields a lot better than they were when we first started, and actually started playing some league games there. And then against my better judgment, I started a third Colping team for my daughter, Jess. And she's currently just finished up her career at St. Louis U and is now headed off to grad school to pursue a physical therapy degree. So I had those three teams going, and at some point, it became clear to me that I needed to move my daughter Erica to a different team. So she moved over to Lou Fuse her freshman year, which lightened my load a little bit. And then my son did move over to Kutus himself. So I had Jess's team at Colping, and Nina was just getting started playing, and she played for Marty Pike her first year at Lou Fuse, and that's how she got into club soccer at U8, I believe. And so eventually I moved Jess's team over to Fuse, not only for convenience, but also just to cast a little bit bigger net. We had a pretty good team, but we were needing to expand to the 11v11 format, and you know, needed to bring in some more players. So was at Fuse for a few years, and finished up there with the O2 group, and that team did well, had a lot of success, won a few state cups, went to regionals a couple times, and all those kids ended up having the opportunity to play in college. And then that kind of leads us up to the baby of the family, Nina, who is currently a freshman at St. Louis U on the women's team, and obviously the great friend of Pat's daughter, Ella, and your daughter, Emma.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, just to interrupt you for a second, like one of the unique aspects of this arrangement and this group of men and is simply that they, you know, we have spent an enormous amount of time together, but it is related to soccer, but it stems from not only the club soccer, but high school experience. They all attended Nerick's High School. So, you know, Pat, I know you know the St. Louis high school scene from all angles better maybe than anyone, but, you know, speak briefly about the, you know, the Nerick's experience and how that kind of affected us and contributed to where we are today.
And then also, how did you juggle your second job here at McGurk's as owner?
I appreciate that, Chris. And thanks for the nice, kind words about McGurk's in your introduction. My pop opened up in 78. I've been down here responsible for over 30 years, and it's certainly a great
spot.
And
you use that word responsible loosely.
Yes. But the soccer has been such a great experience. It was so much time with myself and my little one, Ella. My older daughter, Natalie, played a lot of lacrosse, but at sort of a modest level, and certainly not the amount of time that the little one put into soccer. And Pete, before I get to your Nerick's question, it started so early. I can remember walking around the Lutheran South high school track with Mike Preusser, my great pal now, who I just met 10, 11 years ago. And I knew then he was certainly a rock solid fella. And I knew that was a good friendship that was starting. And Elle and Nina are certainly great friends and still great friends today. And then Pete, our kids have been best pals. Emma and Elle have just been connected at the hip, playing every year of club soccer, every year of high school. It was certainly our kids. It was their birthright after games and practices. Where are we going to lunch? Where are we going to dinner? And it was a social outing, and it was so much fun. And then the Nerinx three seasons, freshman year wiped out with COVID, but the three seasons at Nerinx were just were fantastic. I mean, the whole coaching staff, Brian Haddock and Marty Tote, Cindy Burnt, the whole experience at Nerinx with our three girls being great pals was tremendous. And they won an ocean of games, got to the 4A state final all 3 years, and we saw the tears in their eyes after each of the games. But the build up to get to those final games was so many wins and so much fun. So it was an incredible father daughter bonding, the whole soccer thing. And the bonuses, I got to become great friends with Peter Alfred Genino II, and Michael Preusser, and Christopher Genino along the way. So it's been fun.
It's been a tremendous blessing. And you know, as everyone here at this table was at all three of those final games for the high school seasons, and despite the outcomes, tremendous memories were instilled in us. And you know, and I think they. I had to interrupt Mike to talk about that, because I think that high school experience was so unique, and it allowed, you know, with our daughters playing together and having that opportunity to also play together on the club, in the club arena, could not have necessarily had to benefit them. And you know, Mike was able to give them advice both, you know, off the field for high school and on the field for club. So you know, and during that time, the Rangers were kind of a club that had existed before any of us, you know, before Mike or Pat or myself were involved. And but at some point, Mike, let's kind of get back to where you were at some point. You know, you weren't even involved in the Rangers before we were.
No, so the Rangers were part of, I believe that the club was actually called the Woodson City Rangers back, and a guy named Jim McPherson started the team. And they were actually kind of a rival of ours over at Fuse when we had our kids playing over there with Marty Pike's groups. And then Woodson became Sporting, and Jim stayed with the team for a while, but his daughter was actually playing up a year. And at some point he decided to move her into the proper birth year. And when he did that, a guy named Rob Wilkinson took over as the head coach of the Rangers, and he had the team for a year. And it just so happened that the spring of that year was what is commonly referred to as the trapped year, and that would have been in 2019 when the girls were, our girls were eighth graders, but the other half of the 04 group were freshmen. So,
what were you doing at that time?
Oh boy.
I was coaching. At that point, I still had the O2s and over at Fuse with my daughter Jess, and then I was the assistant coach of the Sporting Red Devils.
Never heard of them.
right, that Nina was on that team. So in that spring, we had a handful of kids from that team and a handful of kids from the Rangers, including year two daughters, and we combined that group to play in the spring, and I think that's when the idea kind of hatched. I think Rob had asked me if I wanted to help coach that spring. There were a lot more Rangers than there were Devils.
Of course.
Trap kids. And so, you know, we started running training sessions together, and I got to know Rob, and, you know, we became friends, and, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, the X's and O's, but we also, you know, talked more on a broader scope about the club and the age group, and trying to, you know, see, we, you know, we could see that there was a nice balance with that group of younger 04s, and we could see that there was potential there, and the team did really well that spring. I think we won, you know, most of our games, and there was a lot of potential there for expansion, and Rob was the one who actually had the idea to maybe create a third team.
Well, in all fairness to the Devils, I mean, the Devils had so much success and attracted so much attention to the club at that time for the age group, that 04 age group, that
right.
It necessarily brought new kids to the club just to take a look and see if they could become part of the Devils. And there were enough Rangers that could become part of the Devils, but I don't want to ignore that success they had, because it was really important to making it available for three teams to be available at Sporting.
Sure. So essentially that tryout season, after a lot of the kids were coming back from their first year of high school, the older 04s, we ended up having a tryout, and I think we had somewhere around 60 kids show up. And we knew we had enough kids for three teams, you know, three quality teams. So we had tryouts, we had kick-arounds, we had a lot of kids out, we watched a lot of kids play, we identified talent, and we kind of sat down and you know, divided the kids up into three groups. And you know, Bob and I were going to continue coaching the Red Devils, and, you know, I assumed Wilkinson was going to continue to coach the Rangers, and then we were kind of looking for a coach for that third group. But about two nights before the final tryout, Rob called me and he said, "Hey, I had an idea." He said, I think I want to coach the new team, and I think I'd like you to coach the Ranger team." And so I thought to myself, do I really want to take on a third team right now? I've been involved with three teams before, and it was hard. You know, it was a lot of, you know, because I'm not a paid coach, so you're going to work, you know, 40 hours a week and then doing the soccer stuff at night. And but having been able to had the opportunity to work with a lot of these kids in the spring and seeing a lot of the kids that were at the tryouts, it was an interesting and kind of an exciting opportunity. So long story short, I end up taking on the team, and you know, year one begins, and, you know, we were able to get a lot of kids who ultimately were good players on bad teams, is my best way to describe it, all kind of came together to form our group. And so a lot of the first part of year one was, you know, creating some reassurance with the old existing Ranger parents and the new parents coming in, that, you know, I had their kids' best interests in mind, because none of them had me for a coach before. So it was, you know, there was definitely a break-in period there. But I had two guys that are sitting at the table with me here, whose daughters were also on that team, who did a lot of
Our phone bills were extremely high during that time.
Yeah, well, it's one thing to identify talent, and then after you identify talent, you have to recruit the talent. And then after you recruit the talent, you have to retain the talent. So it's to make a business correlation, it's a lot like running a business. I mean, it's one thing to find the people, and then you have to attract them to come to your team, or you have to attract them to come to your business to work. And then at that point, the job is basically to either train the employees or the partners or the players so that they're good enough that they could leave and play anywhere, or good enough that they could leave and start their own company or work somewhere else. But you have a culture that is strong enough that everybody wants to stay. And if that's a big, that's a job that is a major part of being a coach and a major part of being a business owner. And I think there's a tremendous amount of correlations between sports, leadership, and business. I mean, unbelievable amount. So in preparation for if you want to call it the real world, the trials and ups and downs that you experience throughout that is great preparation for their next stage, which is where all those girls are at right now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I think, like Mike said, there's a lot of on the field stuff that goes on, but a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And I think everyone knows this, but it's never been recorded. I think it's time to record it. You know that, Patrick Halloran has a gift, and certainly a gift to communicate. So, and that communication was. Go ahead.
I would like to hear a story about. I mean, I've sometimes yeah. I would be at work with Pete and I would be working, and I'm just kind of. You know, a little bored doing what I'm doing for a moment. And I just say, can you call Patrick and put it on speakerphone for a minute so I can go down and learn a couple things on what you guys have been doing. But Patrick, you weren't afraid to pick up the phone and find out about a girl that had some talent to bring her into the team, were you?
You ever call any doctor?
No. No, I was not ashamed to pick up the phone to call people that I knew or people that I did not know about coming to our team. And I was immensely proud of our team, and we always had a great nucleus, and I knew we had a great coach, and I knew we had a great core of kids. And so it meant a lot to me. And every team, you're always looking for a couple kids. And Chris, you asked about a couple stories. In that trap year that Mike talked about, we played a team a couple of times, and they had a few kids on that team. We were a little bit above them on a talent perspective, but they definitely had a handful of kids that I thought would fit. And frankly, Rob Wilkinson met with Kurt Shane and some of the kids from his team came over, and they're great kids and great players. And to this day, are great pals of all of our girls, Emma, Nina, and Ella. There was another game that we were playing a team from Jeff City. I'm watching the game, and I'm seeing that there's two kids on the Jeff City team that are better than the rest of their team. So I'm calling our coach saying, hey, you need to talk to the coaches. And I'm calling mid-game. And it was Rob Wilkinson at the time.
To do.
And he answered the phone, and he's like, what? Because the game's going on. His parents calling him. He's kind of used to me bothering him a little bit. But we had a great relationship. Rob is fantastic. And so I said, you need to talk to those parents, those two kids. And he knew what I was talking about. I was like, those are the coach's kids. And we ended up getting them to the team. And we were always a solid team, and Mike just brought the team to another level. But back to your original point, Chris, no, it was I felt a great attachment to the team.
So those kids driving 1 hour and 40 minutes to practice, no biggie?
2 or 3 times a week.
Right. That's dedication.
And that happened for years.
What are you looking for when you guys are looking for players? I mean, could you find correlation with similar attributes on, people that you want to help run this company and top-level players that you're looking to? I mean, competitiveness comes to my mind. You know, people that want to compete. Those two girls probably stuck out as competitors. They wanted to win more, you know.
Yeah.
I know which two girls you're talking about, because I think I was there the first day they came.
Yes. I don't know that much about the nuance of soccer, but I do feel like I can look at, especially the younger generation, I feel like I can look at a game with 9 to 14-year-old girls and pick out who really sticks out. Most of it is just speed and athleticism, but you can certainly see some of the IQs on the field. And so looking for that stuff and then passing that along to the coaches, and then if they can convince them to come over, it's a win-win.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work to make it all happen, you know.
I've got one other story just to show you how there was no bounds. I actually called the parent of a kid that we were looking at who was an assistant coach at a college 1.5 hours away, and I called him on the—I didn't have his number, so I called him on the university athletic director line and asked for him and introduced myself, and he said, oh, okay. And I said, I've seen your daughter, and I think she'd be a great fit on our team. And she never came to our team, but I think he was at least impressed, if not shocked, that a guy 90 or 100 miles away was calling about his daughter.
Well, that's a theme that we've been talking a lot about, and that's
today in particular.
That's the power of asking.
Right.
The power of asking changes lives. You know, but it takes a lot. People are like, if it was that easy, everybody would do it. But then if you think about it, when was the last time you did it? You know what I mean? Whatever it is, whatever the asking is.
I think that, you know, just to build on what you said a little bit, you know, and talking about retaining players and keeping your team relevant, you know, you have got to get better. You have to take steps forward as a team. And the only way to really do that is to add the pieces that you need to succeed. And so, you know, the youth game and the recruiting is, you know, is very competitive because there's a lot of teams, there's a lot of options, especially in St. Louis. And so, you know, sometimes you got to go a little further to find the right kids. And you know, we were able to do that. You know, after year one, we had two goals our first year. One was to get out of group play at State Cup because the team had never done that. And I always try to set goals that are attainable for any team I coach. And our second goal was to get promoted to Premier One in the Midwest Conference, and we were a Premier Two team. We did accomplish both those goals. However, we did lose in the semifinals of State Cup, and we did get promoted to Premier One. And even with, you know, reaching those goals, there were some kids that, you know, decided to go in another direction the following season. And that was probably the most difficult few months of the evolution of this team was the time between year one and year two. And it almost ended up being...
I think it almost
ended up being the end of the Rangers, but I'm going to let you and Patrick
I just wrote
talk
that
about,
down because it needs
that.
It's a story that needs to be told.
It's pretty amazing.
And it has to be told because, so just to paint a little bit of the landscape here, when we arrived at McGurk's tonight, it's closed, so we had to get Pat's attention on the phone, and he opened a window on the second floor to acknowledge his presence. And in that room upstairs, he and I met in that time in between the two first year and the second year of the Rangers. And we had a lot of meetings, but this meeting was of the more serious nature. And so Pat, let's revisit that. You know, we were faced with a pretty significant situation that most people probably don't know, but it's a story that is appropriate to be told right now. So
let's have it.
At that time, let's talk about what happened when I came up to your office and we had a couple phone calls and discussions.
Yeah, we were. You got to cut me off if I'm getting my timeline incorrect. But when we were up there, we were talking about, because we knew that we were short on kids.
Right.
And there was another opportunity that we could have gone to another team, another club. And you and I were talking, and we've been on the team. We're the second and third most senior members, our kids being the members of the team. Sometimes I like to include myself on the team as a dad.
Rightfully so.
But our kids are second and third senior members on the team. And number one, which we call her the OG, is Allison Schrumpf, and her parents... Ken and Jody Schrumpf. Jody's been the manager, fantastic one at that. And Ken Schrumpf, we kind of nicknamed him Papa Bear because he's the most senior dad on the team. I think you and I were talking, and we were a little unsure. And I think we remember calling Ken, and he's at work, and he was a little shocked by the call. And I told him we were in the office talking about leaving, and he was a little bit shocked by it, and he expressed like, "No, we're good. We just need to find a few more kids. Like, go find five kids, you know, like they're walking down the street." Like, just you know.
And the problem was some of the kids that were leaving, they were significant. You know, they were kids that played 90 minutes.
They were important pieces.
You know, two in particular that come to mind. You know, the center back and captain.
Yep.
And then and then one of our main, you know, goal scorers and kind of the motor that at that time ran the offense.
Right.
Sounds like a lot of opportunity.
I think we had about 9 or 10 kids, and you know, you need 11 kids on the field, and you at least need a few subs, and so we were naked short.
And we were tight with Mike at this time too.
We were. And Mike was willing to do anything. Hey, if we're short, let's make a decision to do something else. And Pete, I remember you and I we made the commitment, like, Mike is the right guy and this nucleus is the right nucleus, and we have to find 4 or 5 kids. And we did. We made that happen. And then that got us over the hump as far as enough kids.
Well, it was the last day of tryouts, and we were, because of the pandemic, we were 65 miles away, out past Wentzville, because we couldn't play in St. Louis County.
Wow. What was the name of that town?
I want to call it
Moscow Mill?
Something Hill. Flint Hill.
Flint Hill.
Flint Hill, that's it.
Yeah, I think it was exit P off of 40. And I know it took
you me had to want it.
I found a field.
Yeah, right. Right. So we're having a tryout out there, and we've got and that morning I got a call. One of the kids that we really were trying to retain was on the fence, and I got a call from her dad saying, "Hey, we're going to make the jump. We're going over to Fuse. We want her to play in the GA, and that opportunity doesn't exist at Sporting because, you know, she was basically told she wasn't good enough to be on the GA team at our club." And so we're going into tryouts. I know I'm several kids short, but I also got a couple kids from Fuse coming that day, and I felt pretty good that one of them was going to commit. Wasn't sure about the other one. Hadn't even talked to her parents yet, but knew she was a good player. And then I'm about 10 minutes into my workout, and I get and my phone rings, and it's Rob Wilkinson, and he's over at some other field, and he says, "Hey." He said, "I just got off the phone with the Jeff City kids, and they're on their way to Flint Hill right now." So I know these two kids are coming, and I know these two kids are...
And these are the same Jeff City kids that Pat was referring to earlier.
And I know these two kids are first 11 kids, right?
Yeah, yep.
And without even thinking twice about it. So I know they're coming.
Somehow they ended up in a Blues game box that night, too. I don't know what the hell happened.
Might have happened.
They may have, but I knew what my play was going to be because I knew we had to get these kids, and then I had to try to get these two Fuse kids. And if we could get those four kids, we were going to be in great shape, and we would find the other kids we needed, you know, probably two more kids to make it work. So, so they show up, and it's Yanni's dad, Alan, and we're talking afterwards, and I told the girls, you know, you guys, I'm offering you a spot right now. You are a great fit for this group, and, you know, we've watched you guys play for the last couple of years, and we'd love to have you on the team. What do you guys think? And Alan kind of looks at me, and he says, "Well," he said, "you know, they're old enough to make the decision themselves." He said, "We're actually supposed to go to work out with Scott Gallagher here in about an hour, but I'm going to let them make the call." And they looked at each other, and then they turned around and said, "We want to play for you."
Wow.
So it was a great feeling because I knew once those kids committed, I turned around, and then the two Fuse kids said, "We're in," and all of a sudden we're back in business. And
that had to be inspirational for you too, just a feeling of confidence and let's go.
It was, and I knew in that moment, you know, this potentially is going to be a great year. We're better than we were last year. We've got a lot of good kids. And then we also promoted a couple kids from the third team up to our group, right, which filled in the gaps. And then the one kid who was so sure they were going to leave, you know, some unforeseen events happened over the course of that week, and she ended up coming back too. So now we're sitting there at like 17-18 kids, and we're loaded again.
Yep.
And from that day, I don't think we ever looked back.
It sounds like you guys just, you know, you had a situation, and you could either look at it like this isn't ideal, or this is the right situation, and we're just going to burn the ships and make it work. So it sounds like from that day at McGurk's, you guys just decided. Once you decide, you cut off all the other options and you just move forward with the way you were going to proceed. And then when you have one person doing that, it's going to work. But when you have two, it's even going to work more. And when you have three, it typically can't be denied. So when you cut off all other options, you have three people working in one direction and everybody's on the same page. I mean, the results speak for themselves. The accolades of that team were phenomenal. I think you had buy-in from everybody, and we're getting the most out of every player. And like you said, they came from all different places. Maybe they were on winning teams, maybe some of them weren't, but now was a big opportunity for everybody to step up and shine. And it sounds like you guys did that.
Yeah, we actually, I think that's a great point, Chris. We really did. I remember Patrick even had the phone in his hand, and you tell me, he said, "You tell me what we're going to say." He started dialing the number. We had no idea what we were going to say. And then we made a decision, and we're like, we're going with him, you know. And
I was doing yard work when the phone rang, and I had a modified schedule at work because of the pandemic. So, you know, my phone rings, and I see it's you guys, and I'm like, oh, they're definitely calling to tell me they're moving on.
Right.
You know, and the conversation went something like, we've really been talking things over. And, you know, of course, Pat, you know, is leading the charge, so he's going to leave me on a cliffhanger. And he kind of paused, and he said, and we want you to be our coach. So,
great. Let's go.
What do we need to do? Let's go. And, yeah, we just, you know, it definitely was a great feeling. And, you know, I felt like there's got to be some kids out there. And, you know, the two Jeff City kids, like, it's almost like they dropped out of the sky, you know, on the field at Flint Hill that day. And it was...
Some people refer to it as Miracle Saturday, but we won't. Their presence is missed.
Yeah, we know how those guys feel.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you have people, to your credit, coaches specifically, and management here, but when you have a coach that is enthusiastic, and that doesn't mean you have to be jumping up and down, clapping and yelling. Enthusiastic just in the details. And that is seen by the players, and that's who players want to play for. So that makes a big difference. That's when you get, you know, 100% effort. And that type of, those girls, you know, they were accountable to each other and accountable to themselves as well. I think, you know, everybody was on the same page as to, they wanted to win championships.
Yeah, we had a special goalkeeper at that time, too. We probably haven't really identified
her.
But, you know, she was kind of a new Rangers addition at that time. And, Mike, you know, just briefly talk about, you know, you talk about attention to detail. I know, Katie, you'd tell some stories about her warm-ups and stuff. You know, that kid had an attention to detail, didn't she?
She did. And Katie was a kid who had, you know, a more incredible work ethic than any other kid on the team.
Yep.
Honestly, I mean, over the 4 years I was privileged to coach her, her goalie trainer was the same trainer that we used for my son Klaus when he was playing goalkeeper, and his name is Dwayne Kleppel, and he is just a very dedicated, another guy who's just kind of in it for the love of the game.
Been around a long time.
Knows how to train keepers. You know, my son didn't start playing goalie until he was like 12 or 13 years old. And by the time he was in high school, he was a good keeper, you know, and I attribute a ton of that to the time that Dwayne put in with him. So Katie had that same opportunity and she would train, you know, we had our training sessions, and if we weren't training, she was training on her own with Dwayne. I mean, she trained 4 or 5 nights a week.
She didn't skip. Yeah.
And she would stay after practice, and she would always ask kids on the team, hey, will you stay and shoot? And,
yeah.
You know, let me work on this. Let me work on that. And, you know, the two biggest parts of her game that really kind of took her to the next level, and I think it speaks to the culture and the personality of our team, was, one, her ability to communicate and her confidence to talk to her team, because she really, year one, she really didn't talk much, and I challenged her with that. I said, you know, if you want to play in college, you got to be talking the whole game. And, you know, and I told her this. I said, you know, I know you're a super nice kid, but when you're on the field, you have to be a bitch.
Yep.
You know, you have got to challenge.
She's the keeper, right?
You are. You're the general.
Yep.
You know, and everybody's got to follow your lead. It starts with you. You see everything. And the second thing that really brought her game to a new level was her foot skills. She was a little nervous about receiving the ball at her feet year one, even a little bit year two. But, man, year three and four, like, she was as good as anybody receiving the ball at her feet. And a lot of that was attributed to when we did have training, I always made her do any of the possession drills that the team was doing, any of the foot skill stuff we were doing, she was right in there doing it with them. Because, you know, if you know the game, you know that, you know, successful keepers can play with their feet. So Katie's a super, super kid. She's playing at Drury University, and
had a lot of success there.
Yeah, is going to have a great college career there. She just finished up her first year there, and and she's just
she was a really such an important piece.
A quality kid. I mean, just
family was good, and you know, before we dive into the numbers, you know, Pat, you and I. You know, I don't think anyone would be surprised, because when you weren't around or when you were occupied, everyone was asking me, what do we know about this team? Who's playing what position? Who's, you know, Mike was the captain of the ship, but you had an opinion on everything. Tell me about the culture and of the Rangers when we were on road trips, and, you know, because most of our games at some point were on the road somewhere, you know, and you and I would have our conversations, and then, you know, I'd have to deal with a handful of parents and you'd deal with a handful of parents. We had a lot of friends on that team, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a tremendous opportunity for us to hang out and watch our kids play. And we'd drive him or fly him somewhere on Friday, and we might see him again on Monday if it wasn't on the field, right?
Yeah, all those trips were so special. And on all those trips, early on and later in the years when they, quote-unquote, mattered more, regionals or nationals, but all those trips, we'd always size up our opponent. We'd say, who are you playing? We'd try to get as much info as we could. If it's a local team, we could always get who's on the team, what they do. Out of town team, we were asking people in hotels, but
but what did you do? I mean,
a SWOT analysis.
I can't imagine. I don't. You need to at least. This is your. I mean, you always knew what to expect from these. But you tell me, we probably are a 2-goal favorite on this team.
Patrick knew all the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and that's a huge part.
And that team was from Minnesota.
No, well, that was more me looking up their history. And you got to do a little digging online to find what a team's done and what their history is. And then sometimes you got to even follow up and do a little more digging and see what their roster is. So I did a little too much of that, just sitting on the phone in a hotel. And we're all hanging out. So
yes, a lot of people think that from year two, three, and four, I coached that team by myself. But the truth of the matter is he was like kind of like the silent partner, and we would talk a lot.
It was incredible
throughout the week and throughout the season. And we would look at teams and we would talk about the upcoming event, and we would discuss. You know, a lot of strategies and
what
if
we're down 2-1 and but it's late in the game? What's the formation?
And Patrick has a unique ability to ask, you know, the thought provoking questions that every coach needs to be asked by his assistant. But when you don't have an assistant, you know, you got to have somebody there who understands, you know, not a generic question, but a specific question. And with his knowledge and his interest, we covered those bases, and it was pretty awesome.
I never met anyone like that. Like, what?
It just...
what's that gift about?
No, it's no gift. The root of that was just, this is my kid's team, and I took a ton of pride being on it. And as far as Mike, I appreciate the partnership comments, because you've been coaching for 3 or 4 years, and you probably... never had a parent so invasive on talking to you about everything.
Well, you know, I had that one rule, and obviously I heard earlier in this podcast that you did not follow that with Wilkinson, but you were pretty good. You were pretty good for 4 years with me. I think maybe you called me once during a game, and then it never happened again after that.
Oh, I was definitely over-involved with the coaches.
There were a few conversations we had together. We said, do you think I should tell Mike this right now? I go, no, I don't think you should tell Mike this right now.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the decisions that you guys disagreed with wholeheartedly.
Well, I will talk about one, actually. It's not a wholehearted disagreement, but I do. Pat and I had many conversations about formation. And, you know, what I don't know if formation matters in soccer because I can't. Sometimes the formation is just how you start the half.
Right.
And then it evolves into soccer.
Whatever is needed.
But there are many times where we consulted one another about whether the 3-5-2 was the appropriate move. and I'm that's going to lead me to kind of the next step before we get into the numbers, the next step of the Rangers. I mentioned the 3-5-2 because at some point along this journey, the Rangers became kind of an offensive team. And, you know, as the final Rangers developed, the look of it.
Yeah, one of the, and I'm going to ask Mike to explain this now that we've opened up the box of naming some names. Before I get to one name that I'll throw to Mike because he knows that story. But of these kids that we've talked about that have come over, the two Jeff City kids, Georgia Pardalos and Yanni Clark, great kids, and we met their families. It was such great additions, and two or three nights a week we talked about driving in from Jeff City, the couple kids from Lou Fuse, Ella Resch, and Haley Stockhouse, and just super kids and families. And then the families that we see so much today, which are our great friends, the Kristen O'Shea and Anna Shane and Rosie Klein and their families, they just really, all those kids really completed the team. You talked about Katie Fitzler, just fantastic goalie. One of the kids that joined the team was Maddie Bowman. I know Mike was instrumental in getting her to the team, and she sort of supercharged the offense. But before Mike talks about that, as Pete, when you and I are talking to Mike about maybe a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3, and, you know, Mike historically liking a lot of the four back systems, but if we ever were going to play a game with three backs, my daughter, who's a wing back, would get in the car and say, "Dad, what is Mike doing playing three back?" Because of course she's a wing back, and she feels more comfortable when there's four of them back there. And I would say, I don't know, Ella, just go out there and play and compete.
So I had nothing to do with
it. I 100% was passing the buck. It was Mike's decision, but when Pete and I are breathing down Mike's back about three backs for a game here and there.
Well, the team became really talented at near, you know, as it got towards the last 2 years, and, you know, the addition of Maddie Bowman and the addition of Mike's daughter, Nina, it became seriously, you know, it was offensive riches in a way. And we had a great defense too.
No, for sure. When you mention those two kids, the Nina and Maddie, and then you throw in Pete, your daughter Emma, and then Rachel Skyberg came over. She's a great player.
Yeah.
And Quinn Conroy. There was enough kids in the front five or the front six, and then we could start really putting up some crooked numbers on teams. And so that was hence the pressure of the three back.
Great, great, great summary there, Pat. And, you know, Mike, I get Pat gave you the opportunity there to reveal some of that, you know, that success you had with the recruitment of Maddie Bowman.
Yeah. So that goes back to in the summer of 2019, I was obviously coaching the Red Devils, and we went to regionals up in Saginaw, Michigan, and we had a few of the Ranger kids playing with us in that tournament, and knowing pretty sure that those kids were going to be making the move in the fall to that team. But there was another team from St. Louis that had made it to regionals that season, and that was the Scott Gallagher premier team that was Maddie's team at the time, and they got out of their group on a tiebreaker and got in the semifinals and came up against our friends from Milwaukee, the SC Wave. And in their semifinal, they fell, I believe it was 7-0. And then we played and won our semifinal. And then we got in the final the next day, and we beat the Wave. And I was driving home from regionals, you know, obviously, happy flight home. We had just won regionals, and things were looking good. I knew that the Rangers were going to be my team in the fall.
By we, you mean the Devils, yeah.
The Devils, yeah. And so So my phone rings and it's Maddie's mom, Colleen, and she called and you know, was looking, you know, looking to see what Maddie's options were. So, you know, we had some great conversations about what we were doing over at Sporting and the opportunities that would be there for Maddie. And I knew that, you know, bringing a kid like that, over to our club was going to be, just a great addition, because, you know, you're always look for kids that can do things that other kids can't do. And you look for, you know, you look for things you can't teach, you know? And so, you know, eventually Maddie ended up coming to the Rangers as their primary team that year. And, you know, the rest is history. I mean, she was a problem for every team we played. She was often double teamed.
And
got marked a ton, but still found ways to score goals and win games for us. And she was really, in my mind, other than maybe Fitzler, the only kid on the Rangers who could completely change a game all by herself.
Yeah, what I loved about the way Maddie plays is she didn't care if she didn't score on a particular attempt. I mean, she'll try. She'd just do it again and do it again and do it again. Wouldn't stop trying because she didn't score in three attempts. It was like, it just didn't care. Relentless. And eventually one was going to go in.
The good news on that is that Maddie was a star for St. Joe, and our three girls here that went to Narinx, we were, our girls were proudly 6-0 against St. Joe's for the 3 years. So it was pretty nice.
Like that. I know that Maddie kid. She's my daughter's roommate right now at Dayton, doing well at University of Dayton. So, but yeah, Maddie had tremendous success for the Rangers, goal scoring. Everyone knew about her, but eventually couldn't stop her if she played, you know, 80.
I can tell you, I talked to a plethora of college coaches about Maddie at a lot of our events.
Yep. So unusual style of just offensive displays, and generally ended up with a goal. It was just
for sure
something really unique. So Mike, as you sit back, you know, you may have a different perspective. So I'm gonna start with Patrick on this, because as a parent and as the general manager, that title is just coming out today. You know, what do you think as we had a number of great moments, and I think Mike probably knows all those moments with statistics, but what do you think as a parent was a great moment, you know, some of the greatest moments you witnessed?
Well, you mentioned the general manager comment. That stems from us being, that was not me over-involving myself in the team. Well, actually, it was a little bit. But we were shorthanded, like, for a couple years, and we just needed some kids. So there's that.
Hey, you don't need to explain
it. But the other parents are listening, and other parents on the
show. Oh, yeah, this is a big surprise to them.
Yeah, nobody knew until right now that was your role.
So best moments, there were so many of them, but certainly the regionals in St. Louis. And the other team we've talked about, the Devils, which we got so many friends on that. There was one regional, and they were one of the favorites to win it. And we were just, we were not even supposed to be there. 16 teams in St. Louis, and the Devils were supposed to win it. And the next thing you realize is we get out of our group, and the Devils don't. And then we end up beating a team, and Michael probably correct me on this, but we end up beating a team in the semifinal that had our number, the Libertyville team out of Chicago. And I think that's the game when Emma just basically, you know, Maddie scored a clutch goal late, Emma scored a clutch goal late, and winning that game, I think, in double overtime. And then the final game was, you know, Yanni Clark's header off the Kansas team. But that was 100%. We were not supposed to be there. We were not supposed to win it. And it was in St. Louis, so family and friends and the kids. That was the first, like, big-time success for the team. So
to build on that a little bit, there's talking about, you know, the regional championship is one of my favorite things to talk about. First of all, because I think it was the major turning point in the evolution of the Rangers.
I agree.
Why was that the turning point? Well, Pat touched on it a little bit. We as the number two team
Number two in the club, but number probably two, nice 16 in the...
As the number two team in the club and probably in the lower quadrant of the tournament, because we snuck in on a wild card. And to outperform the top team in the club in a tournament is kind of unheard of. And we did it in style. We did it convincingly. Our scores, in group play, we won the first game 3-1. We won the second game 3-0, and we won our third group game 6-1. And so we were going into, the semifinals with, I'm going to say 12 goals for and two against. That's pretty convincing. And then we came up against a team, like Pat said, that had our number. It was a Libertyville team. And they had beaten us the previous November on a cold day in Warrington 7-3 and just kind of took it to us, So going into that semifinal against them, it felt like a big, big hill to climb, and it felt like it was going to be a really hard game. The kids were up to the challenge, and we ended up winning that game 3-1 in overtime, and then
double overtime,
and we won the final 1-0. And one of the most interesting statistics for our team coming out of the regionals was we gave up a goal in the first minute of the tournament, and we scored a goal in the final minute of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that. Is symbolic, because I think that was the moment when the kids began to really believe in themselves as a group. I think that the transition from winning being a possibility to winning being an expectation happened that week. And I think that they now had a sense of collective confidence, competence, and cognizance. I like the three C's of success, and they had a Region 2 championship to back up that confidence and that collective feeling that, we can beat anyone.
That was
Am I remembering
this correctly? Is this the year that we played in the state finals for soccer, high school soccer? And then the next day, we traveled to Rantoul, Illinois, to play in the play-in game for regionals.
Yep,
all our kids having played nearly every minute of a penalty kick soccer.
Our sophomore year.
Yep. So our first state final soccer, they played extensively in the game. They then had the. It was late at night. They went home. They had to wake up early in the morning, drive to Rantoul, Illinois, to play in a play-in game for regionals.
And luckily, Maddie Bowman was well-rested because she was a St. Joe kid, and she scored two goals in that game, and we won 2-0.
The Maddie Bowman shrine here. But the Nerinx girls.
That was a backhanded compliment.
But the Nerinx girls, to your point, Pete, beat. That was sophomore year. Beat St. Teresa's in that semifinal, and that's when Emma dribbled the keeper as the seconds were going off the clock to win 3-1, and that was the first game. Then the following day, played that Dominic team our sophomore year, and that team was a monster. That was the Ben Boydell, Larson.
Right.
They had kids that we mentioned. McPherson, his daughter Kaylee, is a great player. Yeah. She's a freshman. They were just loaded. There's probably 15 kids that went D1 on that team. And and our kids played great and ended up losing. That was the first of the three times.
And that was a night game. And then they woke up, went to Rantoul, played the play-in game, and then played regionals after that.
Three games in probably 48 hours or something. Yeah. And it was hard for the kids. Like, we're in the car driving up to Rantoul. You have to win this game. And they're still drying their eyes from losing the state final. And we've already kind of moved on.
No, but you have to win.
Yes, you have to win.
And we got two subs.
right. Yeah. So that is a great moment and memory. And I guess as a result of winning regionals, the Rangers had a taste of then the national tournament.
So we went down to nationals for the first time and got like the worst draw that any team would ever want to get, and ended up going 0-3. And we were just pretty overmatched we were in the games for a while, and then by the time we were halfway through the second half, we were just overmatched, and we ended up losing all three games. So we knew we had work to do, and we knew we had to get better. So we rolled into year three. We definitely loaded up our plate. And our goals that year were to win State Cup, win regionals, win the NPL Nationals, and then get back to the USYS Natties and get out of our group as opposed to the previous year. So we did win State Cup that year. We did not win regionals. But just a side note on that, the Midwest Regionals is a very, very difficult tournament to win, and I attribute that to the fact that in USYS, most of the, a lot of the best teams are from the Midwest. So the Midwest Regional Tournament is about as difficult a tournament as Nationals, really, for that matter, depending on what your draw is. Would you agree with that, mm-hmm. Pat?
Yeah, for sure.
And we did get to the Nationals for NPL. We lost out in Denver in the finals and took second there. And then we went to Natties that year for USYS down in Orlando, and we won our group. So we did achieve that goal. And then we ended up getting beat in the semifinal by a very good team out of Chicago called Galaxy, who we had a lot of history with. So...
They won it all that year, didn't they?
They did. They won it all. They beat Penn Youth in the final by the same score, 3-0 that they beat us by. So they were far and clear the best team, in U18 that year. And so year three, our challenges in year three were we had one of our best center backs coming back from an ACL and I knew we had to bring her back slow. So her minutes were very limited as the season wore on, and she did play a lot more at Nationals. But I still don't think she was 100% yet, that whole season. So, and then we had another kid that got hurt, another one of our backs. So our back line was really depleted. But we figured it out, and we moved some kids around, and we still had a great year in year three, but we just didn't quite achieve everything we wanted to. So... going into year four, things got really interesting because at that point we were able to get a few kids who had played on the GA team the year before, my daughter being one of them, and coming and playing with the Rangers full time. And then we also got Quinn and Julia Liguori. Who had been on the Rangers for years and went and played with the GA team for a few years and then came back for their last season to play with the Rangers. And really, our fourth season was the best team we had, definitely on paper. And we had a lot of options. And, I know that before that season there was a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations and work being done by people within the club that wanted some of those kids on the Rangers to play on that composite team. And it was kind of funny, I spent a lot of time actually talking to, so most of our kids are committed by that point to some great programs, and I start getting pinged by these college coaches asking me why is so-and-so not on the GA team? Why is she playing on your team? And my simple answer was, well, because do you want her to play on the best team in the club she's in? And, their answer was always yes. And I said, well, she's on the best team. And they're like, well, how, you guys are the second team. I said, well, that's what I call the second team fallacy. I'm sure there's people out there that don't agree with that, but the proof is in the pudding, and we actually played the composite team, the GA team, in a friendly, and after 60 minutes, Rangers were up 4-1, and that was all she wrote that night.
We're gonna shut it down.
It got shut down after 60 minutes, and we never played again. So. That second team fallacy was kind of proven that night, I think. And
kids were confident, and then they had those great additions like you spoke of, and that's just going to instill a little more confidence,
yeah,
right?
And I think this, too. I think when kids are on a team and they develop an identity and they have that, going back to what I said, that turning point after year two, and they're comfortable and they like their teammates, and, you know, there's more to this club soccer thing. There's more to this than just always trying to be on something better, always trying to climb, you know, and sometimes where you're at is good enough. And I think we proved through all the commitments and college opportunities that our kids were able to achieve that you don't necessarily have to be on a GA team or an ECNL team. You know, we had kids leave our team because they were told, if you want to play D1 soccer, you got to get on an ECNL team. And, you know, and it's not true. I mean, we proved it, right? I mean, 11 D1 commits off the Rangers, you know, that's a pretty good number.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a big number, Mike, and you should certainly be proud of that. And there was other kids that could have gone to play. You talked about the center back that got hurt, Kristen O'Shea. She was fantastic. She could have easily played D1 anywhere. There was so many other defenders. My daughter Ella, Rosie Klein, that had multiple opportunities to play places, and they just elected to move on with their academics. But one other addition that came the last year was Ella McAleen, and just a great kid, and was a fantastic center back for the Rangers, and also played with our girls at Narinx. Kind of a great little historical thing is that our three kids and Ella McAleen were the four co-captains at Narinx the senior year. Mm-hmm. Just great friends, all on the same club team and same high school team. And
I want to, we always try to, you know, it's always good to hear a story. And I think of the Ella Mac addition because it reminds me of a story when, you know, unfortunately, Patrick and I, you know, we got to know each other's thoughts sometimes. And it was
too much.
It was so funny. He called me when, I don't know if he called me or he nudged me at a game, and he goes, "Do you know what I'm thinking?" And he goes, "You're not going to believe what I'm going to say." And then I looked at him and I said, "You think we should have Ella Mack on the Rangers?" He said, you're damn right.
I can elaborate on that a little bit. You know, I mean, so Ella was on the Rangers on year one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
And she came to tryouts before year two and said, you know, I'm going to play defense this year. But the problem we had was we had so many kids that were quote unquote defenders. I just at that time didn't really see her as a defender, and she hadn't played a lot of defense. So she went over to Fuse for 2 years and played on their GA group and played defense. And, you know, I think she got a lot of help from Aaron and stuff on how to do that and how to transition from, you know, predominantly playing offense to defense, and then played it at Nerinx for a couple of years, and just it was a good fit to bring her back. But, you know, the nice thing was if somebody as a coach, I've always thought, you know, if somebody wants to move on, you just kind of give them your blessing and you always keep that door open, right? Because you never know what could happen later. And you know, and Mac ended up coming back for the final season and rejoining the Rangers. And it was perfect because that was a hole that we needed to fill. And
it made sense.
And she was the perfect kid to do it, you know, and a great kid. And
you know, here we are six months. Sorry, more like, I guess about 6 to 8 months removed from the end of the club soccer career. And I'm saying that just to put us in perspective to when we're talking about this, because the soccer for the girls, as far as the club team and the Rangers are concerned, ended in late July of 2023. And the girls played every game that they could have played in their high school career. And they completed their club career playing the very last game they could have played. And we were in Orlando at the ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex, which is a tremendous facility. We had the privilege of going there for the last several years. And so, Mike, tell us about the last hurrah, where we were there for a week in Orlando. getting that opportunity.
So, yeah, I mean, our ultimate goal going into our last season, you know, we knew we had the players, we knew we had the talent, we knew we had the depth, and we felt like we can win a national championship with this group. And so that was the ultimate goal, was to go down there and our last game together to be a national championship. And for me, it was my last game coaching. And if I had a dollar for every time I talked to Pat on the phone and said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if my last game coaching was a national final? You know,
it'd be the last game working too.
Yeah.
Daily.
Yeah. And to see that, you know, actually come to its, you know, fruition through all the work of the kids and you know, getting the wins we needed to get and getting to that point was an incredible opportunity. And you know, we had a little bit of bad luck going. You know, we played such a phenomenal semifinal, and you know, because we had three really tough games. Our semifinal opponent was the Casey Scott Gallagher team. Coached by, you know, a good friend of mine, Dan Brown, who, you know, had a great working relationship with him over the years, you know, coaching against each other as opponents. And he had put together a really nice team for their final run, too. And, you know,
They were strong all the time.
As I said a few minutes ago about the strength of the USYSB and Midwest, you know, three of the four semifinalists at Nationals were Midwest teams. You had our team from St. Louis, you had his team from Kansas City, and then you had the Minnesota group, and then Penn Youth, coached by a St. Louis guy, Billy Betcher. So,
wow. Good representation of this town, in this area, I mean.
For sure. And so, you know.
We had a great showing at that semifinal game.
You get to that semifinal game, and you've tied this team twice and beat them once through Midwest Conference play, through National League play,
regionals,
and now you're in the semifinals and Nationals, and you know that it's go time. And, you know, I had a great feeling during warm-up. I just felt like it was going to be our day, and sure enough, it was. You know, our defense was very good that day. Didn't give them much. And we scored pretty early to go up 1-0, and then we just built on that, and we ended up ultimately winning that game 3-0. The downside was, I think a few of our kids got, you know, kind of bit by the heat that day, and you know, we came into the final maybe a little more depleted than we would have wanted to be, and ultimately ended up losing 2-1. But you know.
It was an incredible ride that the kids took us on. You know, you as well, Mike, with the kids, but myself, Pete, all the other parents. It was just a fantastic ride all the years. And Pete, to your point, it's a great point. We played the last game in high school, but then the Rangers Club team playing the last game. I mean, so many rocks unturned, so many memories, so many big wins, so many friendships on the team. I mean, so many of those kids are so close now. It was all worth it. And the only thing this winter when it was icy in January was we were supposed to sign up in like the Sarasota League or something and get down there more because we were down there every winter. So
yeah, I think we went to Florida in that 4 years. I think we were down there 9 times between Nationals and National League and showcases and so on and so forth. I think we made 9 trips to Florida, and they were all, you know, great, mm-hmm. great weeks and weekends. And, you know, to get to that last, to play the last possible game you can play as a club player it's awesome, because not a lot of kids can say they did that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, I guess my final word on the Rangers and that 4-year run, you know, some might look at our final game and you know, see that it wasn't our best day and look at the project as a failure. Ultimately, but
we just blame the coach on that game. That's all.
That's right. It's coaching.
And I would take a fair amount of that blame, but I would also challenge our detractors to show me another youth team whose collective body of work, i.e., you know, overall success, collegiate commitments, reputation, etc., achieved more in that short of an amount of time. I can't think of a team or call to mind any team to my knowledge, at least in the St. Louis area, that's done that. And I'm very proud of that. And
you should be.
And the kids, you know, the kids did the bulk of the work. It was all about the buy-in and the confidence and, you know, relying on each other and playing for each other. And it was an awesome experience. You know, and when I sat down knowing this podcast was coming up and jotted down some notes and kind of looked at our numbers, and as I call it, Rangers by the numbers, we accomplished a lot as a team. You know, we had three nationals appearances. Once we made it to the semis, the other time we were a finalist. We won the Region 2 championship in 2021. We won two state cups in 22 and 23. We were a finalist in the U.S. Club Nationals in 2022. We won the National PRO League in 23 outright. We were two-time Midwest Conference champions in 20 and 22, Fall League. And we were the NPL League champs in 21-22. And when you look at our college commitments, we had 11 kids go on to play D1. Two D2 commits, one D3, and one NAIA kid. And then, as we mentioned, four to five other kids who definitely could have played, but chose not to ultimately.
Wow. I mean, pretty spectacular. You know, the evolution of the Rangers is just, we're talking about it because it's important to us as parents. It's important to you as a coach. It's important to our kids. And hopefully, you know, this memory will serve us all well down the road for sure. Gentlemen, any last words before we sign off? Oh, I have one. I ask the question and I answer it. It's this podcast is going to be published here in the next couple of days, and we are right on the heels of the Mardi Gras celebration. So please enjoy Mardi Gras here at McGurk's, John D. McGurk's. Pat, what are we doing for Mardi Gras on Saturday? Is it February 11th, 10th?
Yeah, I think it's February 10th. It's 10th. This Saturday, that's the grand parade. This past weekend was a nice success. The Taste of Soulard on Saturday and the dog parade on Sunday. So there was a lot of people down here. Next Saturday will be great. There's people from all over the Midwest come in. And the band that we have playing is a group of four super guys. And the band's name is Jig Jam. And it's Jamie, Dahi, Gavin, and Kevin. And the first three, Jamie, Dahi, and Gavin, are all from Ireland. And Kevin Buckley's a talented local musician. But the four of them represent Jig Jam. And they've been, last couple of years, they've been traveling all around the country, from L.A., San Francisco, Vegas, Dallas, New York, Chicago, Miami, anywhere you can think of. And the only reason why I bring up those cities is that when they were traveling for a couple of years, they decided that they needed to have a home base and pick a home. And of every place that they played in, and they were, all those cities I mentioned and more, they picked St. Louis. And so for a lot of the problems that we have here in the city of St. Louis with crime and all the other things that people talk about, people forget about, there's some fantastic stuff in the city, and I'm not even going to go into all that now, but here are three guys from Ireland that have been coast to coast, and of all the cities they went to, they picked St. Louis. So
no, it's crazy, and I've been lucky enough to be a spectator for Jig Jam's performances here at McGurk's, and it is my favorite performance in town. So, you know, I know you'll be busy Saturday, Pat, but you'll take a few more people, right?
100%. Come on down. There's plenty of room.
We got outside opportunities too. And then if the sun goes down and you need to come inside, you're welcome inside at John D. McGurk's in the heart of Soulard, right along the parade route, I believe, right?
It's good stuff, yeah. And I expect both of you guys on future podcasts that McGurk's is the first thing that you speak
about. For sure. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.